It's the marketing and sales, which is responsible for the growth of the company. There's the accounting, which is where all the numbers are tracked. And I mean more than accounting when I say numbers. But the third is production. And when I say production, I'm kind of alluding to what I heard you talking about. It's that area of the business that's paying attention to what's going on with the customer experience. What's happening with that feedback that we're getting from the customer to know what needs to improve in the product that we're producing.
Even great leaders get stuck. Others thrive. I'm Mark Cook, New York Times bestselling author, president of Windfall Partners. We get leaders unstuck and thriving with their teams. Clients upgrade leaders retreats and conferences with my five-star keynotes and breakouts on leaders' bold encounters. Also, leaders get weekly consulting as they execute key steps. Plus, brief check-ins guarantee results live or via Zoom. After turnarounds as chief executive and 9 global studies of 2 million award-winning leaders, I've coached 4,000 client wins at top brands with my approach in over 50 cities worldwide. My Bold Encounters is an advanced system for leading. First, powerful steps on a path forward. Second, problem-solving skills that beat obstacles fast. Leaders create revenue breakthroughs and clients see new profits. Now let's lead with Bold Encounters today.
Welcome. Today I have Roger Knecht. I'm excited to have him. He is the president of Universal Accounting. And he also has been an operations leader, and he is an expert entrepreneur in sales and marketing as well. So how are you today, Roger?
Wonderful. It's a beautiful day. Excited for this conversation.
Thanks for coming. You'll talk to anyone and they talk about the very first conversation with one of those human beings that we call people in our target market. They just take it for granted. We met this great stranger. They fit the right job description. They have tons of budget, and they're just looking for somewhere to spend it. Even in a recession, they're the ones that just show up and offer that we argue with them about how the price will look. But what is missed is how challenging the very first conversation is with a stranger in today's busy world. How to attract someone to even have a 5-minute conversation or get in an office with us. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, the first thing I would say is the more recent conversations have been about how the younger individuals are struggling to even have that conversation face to face. And so whether it's someone seasoned who's very comfortable interacting with another individual and asking questions, having a dialogue, or someone that's just unnatural in that setting, the best piece of advice I would first of all give is definitely put yourself in a state of curiosity. One of the things that I think compensates for a lot of misgivings, and it's at the leadership level, at the entry level, is if that person can just bring a curiosity to the situation, the natural questions will come. And then in those questions, they'll have an opportunity to listen and basically discuss things that are interesting. And I'm not talking about business necessarily. I'm first speaking of we need to be taking time to get to know one another on a personal level. And for some people, that's very uncomfortable. You know, what is appropriate to ask? What should I be curious about? So let me just offer a few suggestions, if I may. Would that be all right?
Please, please.
The first thing I'd want to do is whenever I've gone to client meetings and I've actually walked into their environment, in other words, I'm on their premise, what I'm going to do is in that meeting is I'm going to have basically four objectives. The first being that for the first few minutes, perhaps 15 minutes at most, is I want to find out what I can about them, who they are, why they work there, how long they've worked there, why they're doing what they're doing. If possible, get into their personal lives, how long they've lived in the area, tell me about their family. If there's anything in the office that may kind of reveal some of their interests, why that's there, did they have a trophy, did they go on a vacation? That type of conversation typically will relax someone because of my genuine curiosity in them as a human being. And it's very comfortable. Now, typically, I don't want to get to the point where I'm straining the 21 questions and they feel like it's an interrogation. That's not what I want to do. But if I can get them to the point where they're comfortable with me, they'll typically reciprocate and they'll ask me some of those same questions. So be mindful. If I'm willing to ask it, I need to be ready to answer it as well. Where am I from? Where? How long have I been there? And so forth. But what I want to do is within about 15 to 30 minutes is transition it now to business. And that's where I think there's a lot of opportunity. Now, one of the things I want to stress is whenever possible, and I'm maybe meeting the person in the lobby or I'm meeting them in the office or in the business area, but not at the office, is I will ask on a way to the actual office to sit down for a tour. Give me a tour. Take me the long way. Kind of point a few things out to me. Along the way, it's kind of fun. I might get some swag in the way. Hey, can I get a t-shirt? Hey, can I get a hat? And what it does is it gives them a chance to actually talk about what they're proud of. This is our company. These are our products. These are our people. This is what we do here. And if I can do that tour preceding getting to the office and then getting to know them, the rest of the conversation is going to be easy because then we can talk about why we're meeting and what I have to offer. And that comes later, but it all starts with the tour and the genuine curiosity of them as a human being.
Yeah, that's a terrific insight. In fact, you know, in our work, I've investigated 2 million cases of award-winning work, compared them to lousy results and discovered the difference. And of 600 variables, one of the very few things that popped up as predicting amazing results was something very close to what you suggest, but I've never thought of it in this context that you're talking about. It's brilliant. It's very front end of the relationship. There's something that some, you know, if you're in lean, you call it go to Gemba. If you're in innovation, you call it contextual inquiry. If you're in product development or in science, you call it ethnography or product ethnography. And in one of our books, we call this See for Yourself or the Average Person. But it's really about visiting the place of the other person. And in very specific ways, in very specific perspectives, it can even heighten what you're talking about, where suddenly you become more of an expert in some of the fine details than the contact you're visiting with, because they've never looked, because we tend to focus in our environments. And only by stepping back and looking at the process of what is broken, not working well, or getting better, can we see things that we hadn't seen otherwise. And so we will actually notice things that the prospect or our new client or our new contact, if we're a leader, has never even noticed if we're looking in the right places. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
Just going to add, using what you just shared, let me kind of build off of that for a minute. Please. When I'm working with a leader, someone that is over individuals and employees, I'm going to pay attention on that tour that I described as to how they interact with the individuals that are on premises there. Are the people intimidated by them, or are they approachable? Are they happy to be seen, or are they kind of scour away to the side? I want to see what's happening in the business and how this leader actually interacts with those people that are subordinate to them. And I think that's very healthy to know, because that's going to impact or influence the relationship I'm having with them. The other thing I would also add is, if you're going to their premise rather than them coming to your office or even meeting on a neutral ground, typically when I meet with them at their office, I'm on their field, and therefore they're in a position of strength and they're comfortable there. So if anything, I should be seeing them in their best. And so if I come in and I see them in a comfortable environment where they're strong, I'm typically able to give them a comfort of realizing, look, I'm not a threat. I've got nothing here to intimidate you by. I'm here to listen and learn. I just want to find out about you. I actually don't want to talk about me. All I want to do is talk about you. And that's one of the first misgivings that I think a lot of salespeople perhaps experience, is they think they're there to talk about themselves. And when in reality, the best advice I would give is they are there to listen and find out about the prospect that they have. So it's all about, and you know, so people would refer to it as Stephen Covey's, it doesn't matter how much you know, it first matters how much you care. That's what people are really paying attention to. Once they know that you care, they're going to be willing to listen to you. That right there is, I think, the synopsis of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. I think another thing that people listening will not realize is that we've been talking about selling. And what the truth is, someone who's trying to manage their own career and create exceptional results for clients or prospects or new people, new markets, one of the very most important things that is incredibly rare are the two things we're talking about right now. They have a practice at each week of meeting new relevant people to this problem they're trying to solve. Not the same old ecosystem, not the network of last week, but always new people. And the only difference really between that first meeting, you know, the salesperson's going in and discovering, then they're going to ask for some money after they present. But when you're a product person, you're a product manager, you're a product developer, you're a product, a technical product manager, or you're building code, you have this thing that happens at the front end of Agile that's called continuous product discovery. And you're supposed to talk to customers, but that word customer is big and usually always defaults to the comfortable people that are already complaining. And that's not a fair representation of the future opportunity. So these people can win awards, can create client results and financial results by meeting new people, new prospects, and listening very carefully to the memories of actual problems and reaching out to these new people. So we're not just talking about salespeople. Is that what you found true for idea people that get somewhere in careers?
I'm going to take one of the words that you said in there, that you said production. When we talk about business, I break it down into three areas. It's the marketing and sales, which is responsible for the growth of the company. There's the accounting, which is where all the numbers are tracked. And I mean more than accounting when I say numbers. But the third is production. And when I say production, I'm kind of alluding to what I heard you talking about. It's that area of the business that's paying attention to what's going on with the customer experience. What's happening with that feedback that we're getting from the customer to know what needs to improve in the product that we're producing. Now, here's where I would actually emphasize what their responsibility is. And I don't care if this is at the C-level or if this is all the way down at the operational level. The production department has to first and foremost have a line of communication with its customers that they're getting feedback. They need to be able to receive basically in a moment's notice, daily, weekly feedback to know whether or not the products and services are working as intended, are the customers experiencing them as they hoped. And that feedback is what's going to actually feed the internal process to know what part of the product or service needs to evolve or improve. So a good productions manager, a good productions team is actually more interested in what's going on in that communication than anything else. So whether it be chat, phone, customer interactions, observing usage, all that data is helping us understand what's going on at the customer level to know, are they getting what they hoped for? Are they happy with what they're receiving? And how can we improve that? So that's the context of how I'm hearing what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's true for production. I mean, the job one is to delight, to thrill someone, that customer that's making a decision. And there's usually three parties. There's usually the people, the end users, which often in B2B is the workforce. There's the executives, the C-suite or the executive that's making the decision. And then there's your contact. And people are very focused on contacts and leaders, but very few people are forward thinking enough to go all the way to their audience, the client's audience, and figure out how to thrill those people as well. So it's really important. It's hard work. You've got to thrill and delight and fulfill needs at all three levels from all those parties in order to be a star for that customer.
I'm going to add to this. One of the parties that is so critical to the success of this is the ability of the production side of the company to communicate to the sales side of the company what are the features and benefits that they're able to promote and offer. And here's what I'm talking about. It's only natural that the marketing and sales team is going to embellish what's going on, what the client can expect. That's innate. Let's just say that's expected. But what's going to happen here is they can only speak to what the production side of the company is saying that the product actually does. And so what we're trying to do is, first of all, make sure the communication that the company has between the production side of the company and the sales side of the company is clear enough so that the company can over-deliver on what's stated. If the company is in the sales process overstating the expectations that the customer may have, you're setting that transaction up for failure. So yeah. We've got to basically say, okay, production team, what does the product actually do? What are the specs? What are the things that I can emphasize on the sales side so that the customer is at least interested in doing the transaction, but leaves you enough wiggle room that you can over deliver. And as you said, delight the customer. Well, that's the first line of communication, is it's internal. The internal communication of this new product release, this new update, why, what, what's the benefit of it? What's that feature that we need to be bringing attention to? That's essential for the company to have as lines of communication. And just because of some of my experience, I'll also add, how sad is it that with the customer support and even sales, that the production part of the company rolls out a new update, does a change, a modification, the customer hears about it or sees it before customer service or the sales team even know that it's happened. And the customer knows more about the product than the internal people within the organization because they haven't received the memo yet. That's one of the things that illustrates the importance of this communication going back and forth within the organization. And it happens in the largest and in the smallest of companies.
Yeah, that's a fun moment when you're that person. Let me just add one other last thing that you're bringing up, and that is that these people have to work together. In fact, in Agile, it's stated like there has to be three people that are involved in continuous product discovery at the front end of a process before things get logged and coded and tested and such. And it has to be all those people that you're talking about, and they have to be talking. One of the great things about you talking about the tour is that if you don't go and see what we're talking about, you not only lose a little bit of intellectual ideation, but even more importantly, you lose context that is emotional and literal. And it creates a powerful persuasion and ability to communicate with each other. When we were at that line at the factory, when we saw Jim in his office with his picture of this, and the reality of a human being seeing another in need, even in a small way, elicits a response. One of our 12 successes we seek in life is to help and nurture. As long as it's not too expensive and dangerous, we want to help, and it elicits that. It's a very emotional thing. But what you said about a brand new person coming in for the first time and saying, give me a tour, to lighten the conversation, to get a little more personal, to have the pride and expertise show up of your host, that's really a smart add to your first visit to a stranger anytime, for sure. Great point. I want to skip to the next part. Like, we've got them to sit down with us. We have a little context. And before I go earlier than that, I want to talk about the next step. So that's a discovery. We're having conversations about what they need and problems they've had and opportunities they have. And we've seen it. And now it's time for us to not pitch, but to talk about them still and paint a picture in their mind with them, not for them, with them, of success in the future. What is success in the near term and the midterm look like for you? And to paint that picture. And one of the most important things to do is to not just stay at the visible, literal level, like Domino's Pizza sells pizza and delivers, but they gather people. They're a social company that brings people together like glue. That's a second layer. That's the experiential, the emotional level. And then there's a third we won't talk about yet today. We'll do that in another episode. But one of the needs, one of the 12 cardinal successes that we have on the second, deeper, really more meaningful level is finance. You know, and sometimes finance and money is a currency for wellness. Sometimes it's currency for better security. It's adventure, certainly, with all these people traveling everywhere in our generation. But for some, like your audience, the accountants and the finance people, their job, their personal job, and often their company is focused on creating financial success. And so help us, from your industry as middle managers and leaders in the C-suite of mid-sized companies, my audience, help us gain a little insight on when we're meeting with someone who is a particular financial expert or job, what does it look like to paint a picture into the future? You mentioned you have a few stopping points you like to make talking about business finance success.
Well, there's a few ways we can take this conversation, and I'm going to try and hit on two, and maybe you can decide where you want to go deeper.
Sure.
The first thing that I like to do is have a conversation with the individual. Even though they have a role in the company and a responsibility, I want to ask them one very specific question. What is the biggest challenge, fear, or opportunity that you're facing right now that you would like to address in the next quarter or in the next year? And I want them to articulate to me what's on their agenda. I want to know what they're trying to prioritize and take care of. And once they can articulate to me what's the priority for them, I'm able to then take what I'm able to do and tailor it to help them achieve their goal. Mm-hmm. So the first and foremost thing is I need to understand, okay, what's keeping you up at night? What's the stress that has someone in your organization coming to you expecting something to improve or change that I can help with? And so it's the biggest challenge or fear or perhaps opportunity that you're trying to realize in the next quarter or year. And once that's out there, we're good to go. The second thing that I'd like to share, and again, we can go in either of these two directions, is I think from an accounting perspective, C-level people, leaders, business owners, they sometimes struggle to understand the responsibility of the profession. And so I'm going to just right now articulate very clearly what our role is as accounting professionals. And this should allow you to more intently have a conversation with whomever it is that you're working with. First of all, accounting is made up of three areas. Okay, it's bookkeeping and accounting, tax planning and preparation, and CFO and advisory services. Those are the three. So let me dive into each of those six elements. Okay, bookkeeping. Bookkeeping is merely everything going on within the organization to record the historical work, the transactions that's happening in the business, so as to provide the leaders with the information they need to make more informed business decisions. And so that would consist of financial reports that are the P&L or the income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement. If a business owner, a C-suite person, a department manager is getting access to that information on a regular basis, I would dare say monthly basis, then they're getting numbers, information to make more informed business decisions. But the role of the accountant is to now interpret that data for the business professional. Accounting is its own language. And so it's very important that a business person who does not have that acclimate, they need to actually now work with an accounting professional to say, okay, now take that data that the bookkeeping has provided and let's interpret it. And that's where we're going to do certain things, analysis. We're going to look at trends. What's going on in the organization? What's happening with margins, such as our payroll margin to gross profit, our advertising to gross profit? What's our ROI on advertising dollars to gross revenue? It's all these types of things that we're going to interpret as accounting professionals to help the business leaders make informed business decisions. Great numbers to ask for. Just real quickly, accounting professionals should be providing last month compared to the previous month, last month to same month last year, last quarter to the previous quarter, last quarter to the same quarter the previous year, year to date this year compared to year to date last year. All of those would then allow us to dive deeper into the numbers and see how is inflation affecting us? Are the products that we were selling last year selling this year? Lots of things. Let's go to tax planning and preparation. Tax planning is different than preparation. Preparation is simply the filing of the return that the business is doing. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes expertise. But to file the return is a singular event that's happening in the tax year. It's done. Tax planning is all that time and energy put forth by a tax strategist with the business owners to implement strategies that allow them to legally lower their tax liabilities, take advantage of various things that are within the tax law and code that the company can benefit from. So you should be working with a tax preparer and a tax planning strategist, two totally different people, perhaps. The next two individuals happen to be CFO and advisory services. It's critical, whether inside your organization or as a consultant, an advisor, you have someone coming in to help with the different cash flow policies and procedures, how you're managing receivables, how you're taking care of payables, the relationships you have with vendors as to your net term relationships, the relationships you have with capital organizations that provide you the monies you need to run the business, such as lending institutions, investors. The CFO is managing those operating procedures as to what's happening with cash and when it is utilized. That's critical to a business's success. The last happens to be an advisor. The CFO and advisory service is very critical. The advisor is the one now taking all of these things and implementing best practice business principles within an organization to ensure that the business leaders are looking at everything that they need to build value in the company, eliminating the risks that could exist so that the business is valued at its greatest worth. And so you've got six roles there, all that are made up in the bookkeeping and accounting, tax planning and preparation, and CFO and advisory services. This could be one person, six people, but the point is each is essential in your company.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let me ask you a question related to that. If you're another business person, whether you're a leader, a salesperson, or a product developer, you're a senior person in those roles, so that you're reaching out and you're trying to expand your network and expand your ecosystem of unexpected value and expected value, you'll likely find yourself in a meeting that looks like an opportunity to discuss how you could help someone get better, or they would want you to help them get better if they had a magic wand, so to speak. Which of those roles that you just explained to, I know this is a big question, but especially if you're selling software or software as a service or some sort of new technology, which is almost everything these days, if you're in that type of meeting and you happen to have one of these people in one of these roles walk in, who would it most likely be? What is the constellation of people? Is it just the CFO? It's probably rarely the tax, but it could be if it's tax software or accounting software. But for the rest of us, who are we likely to see in those meetings show up and take their time to participate in a small committee of listeners?
So in my opinion, and it depends on the size of the company, on the business side, you definitely need to have the C-suite individuals all in there, and they're responsible for their different divisions of the company. In addition, any department heads, those people need to be familiar with the numbers. And if they're not contributing, they need to at least be listening, and they'll eventually be contributors. But the people that need to be brought into that meeting at different discussions would definitely be the bookkeeping and accounting representatives, whether they're internal or external, because it's been contracted out, to basically help share with these decision makers this information so that they can understand what the data is in front of them. The data only becomes information when it's compiled in reports. The reports only mean anything when they can actually now understand them and now acquire a knowledge to use that information. Wisdom only occurs when that individual has seen the reports often enough that the knowledge becomes second nature. Those experiences come through frequency. And so if you're meeting with your accounting professionals quarterly, I suggest monthly. If you're meeting with them yearly, I say quarterly. You got to accelerate this stuff. The second thing is a tax conversation, totally different tax situation. Tax, you've got obviously the tax liabilities that are being done with the states and the country, the federal taxes. You've got sales tax and payroll. I mean, there's a lot going on there. But the strategist, you deal a lot with technology companies. Very important to them are the R&D tax credits that are available, yes, for the monies that are being spent to develop the products that they now produce. So the R&D tax credit, to have a tax specialist in there that can actually help them leverage how the tax code is beneficial to them with all those expenses they're incurring as they develop these new products, hugely important. So R&D tax credits would be very relevant to your technology base. Now, those conversations need to be had because those strategies, if not implemented in a given year, once December 31st comes, it is nearly 99% sure that whatever you're going to do now cannot be retroactive. Therefore, it cannot impact the tax year that has ended. You have to be proactively in the course of the year making decisions to actually leverage that tax opportunity. As for the CFO and the advisor, the CFO has to be involved in the cash flow of the business. And I would dare say on a quarterly basis, sharing, here's the trajectory we're on. Either the bank account's going to get smaller as we grow the business or bigger as we hire people, open divisions, launch product, do marketing campaigns. This is what's going to happen with the trajectory of the business. First quarter, we're going to lose money because we're actually doing a ramp up of our sales force, doing training. We're starting our marketing and advertising campaigns. Second quarter, we're expecting a break even because that's where we're going to be getting everyone accustomed to the process. Third quarter, we're anticipating that the sales team will be up and running and they'll be producing. But now we've got a production issue. If we can't meet the demand that we're anticipating, we're going to deal with lesser margins. We're going to be dealing with frustrated customers. You have to have these conversations. And the CFO can give that projection, a pro forma of what's going to anticipate, what they can anticipate. The advisor is going to come in and they're going to talk about, okay, how does this actually affect, let's say, employee morale? How does this affect maybe our EBITDA? How does that, you're looking at this through different lenses. Each of these roles are critical.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned a lot of ratios and things that we've heard before as non-accountants and those that have been through business school or graduate school have heard those terms. But it's interesting. The other set of metrics that are really important are the ones they care about. So the popular ratios have to have them. The metrics that the company themselves and the person themselves and the customers are looking at have to have them. But it's interesting to me when we're a leader trying to network with other organizations and talk about value that the relationship would have and talk about it financially, how rare it is that we refer back to the fundamentals. I think because we all know too much. And I had an experience when I was young, and I'm not anymore, but when I was young, I noticed I got an opportunity. I switched companies and had a better opportunity. And I noticed two things in a row. The company I left, I was helping run it. It was a smaller company. And I noticed that the owners were always talking to the CFO. And I didn't really think much about it because we had meetings. And they would talk there. So why are they talking more? And then I went to another company. I was a little older. And I saw this happening again. The CEO was always going to lunch with the CFO. And gosh, it must be really complicated. I hear it. There's something I'm missing. Until one day when we happened to eat lunch in the same place. And I'll admit, I'm not going to say which company, I'll get in trouble. But I was eavesdropping. I'm sorry. And I overheard part of the conversation, and it was clear, although it was cryptic, it was clear that there was a motivation about pay and bonuses, and it was about the major sections that everyone in their first accounting class talks about on the financial statements. You know, how are we going to increase revenue or the sin in sales or in Europe turnover, whatever. And how are we going to reduce expenses? And how is that going to translate into getting more cash in to our actual bank accounts or our greedy little hands? And how are we going to slow down the exit of cash from our bank accounts and our greedy little hands? And then how do we increase the value of assets or manage the asset value in various accounting ways to maximize things? And then how do we reduce liabilities or balance them perfectly? And those conversations are really the six core conversations you have in business finance without all the fancy terms and ratios. And if those don't go well, the bonuses are not very big usually. Is that fair to say?
It is. You know, there are some key numbers that maybe the C level individuals are going to be paying attention to, is return on assets, return on equity, liquidity ratios, financial ratios. There's a lot of numbers that they're hopefully watching. I truly hope that they are watching. But what I think you're asking is there is a bigger, more important number that needs to exist for each and every employee. And we actually teach a philosophy called the STAR system. It's the culture of accountability. And the culture of accountability that we do with our clients is meant to say that every department And every individual must have what's referred to as a key metric. It's a key metric that basically says there's a quantifiable way of stating whether or not you did your job today or this week or this month. And once an employee understands that of all the things that they're responsible for, there's at least one thing that if they do this one thing right, they're doing their job well enough that the company is going to be okay. And what I mean by that is to say that the company is dependent upon all of these things working together. And if somebody drops the ball, it could be a big deal. But if everybody can, in a public setting, have accountability as to this was one thing that they were expected to do and did they or didn't they do that, that's huge. And so we really talk about what's called dashboarding in relations to key performance indicators, identifying a key metric. And so I dare say in a leadership role, one of the things that I would encourage you to do is for every department and every individual, identify that key metric that is essential to determine whether or not the company is successful. Because I know that if that metric is met on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, I dare say that when the financials come out, I'm going to be okay. If I'm missing those numbers, I shouldn't be shocked or in awe of whether or not my financials are positive. I should have known this. And so this is a much deeper conversation, but we get into things that are referred to as leading indicators and lagging indicators. Mm-hmm. We get into key performance indicators that are essential for people to see on a dashboard, visualizing those things, setting expectations, holding them accountable. But there's a lot that goes into this, but your point, I think, is valid. First and foremost, there are essential numbers that at the C-level, we're definitely going to be looking at. We want to watch. They say so much, especially to the investors. But what we're talking about for the employee is we need to give them some sense of accomplishment, some sense of I've done what's been asked of me. What's that one thing that as I get distracted throughout the day, as I have so many things come up, if I can at least end the day doing this one thing, it's been a success. That's what they need to know. That's what they need to have in their job description. And that's what we need to be rewarding them for.
Yeah, one subpart. It's beautiful. I love how singular you are. I really believe in that. I really think that's important. You know, there's a reason there aren't that many people that juggle with four balls. Turns out that three is possible. But if you look at the data from not just my work, but a lot of people's work, when someone's trying to do something really important and then they expand it to two, results decline. And when they expand it to three, they really decline. But when you try to do four, it falls off a cliff. And so I love the singular nature because it's a lot harder to hit three bullseyes than it is one. You know, you've just got to keep it as singular as possible. It's brilliant. I really appreciate that. Hey, before I let you go today, I want to hear about you for a second, if you're willing. I didn't ask you my usual question before we got on. What's off bases? You know, what's off limits, I mean. So I'll be careful. But I want to ask you, you know, my major thrust, my specialty, I work for a specialized consulting firm. We don't do any type of management. We unstick leaders and teams, business people and projects. And then we have a cadence to achieve the actual opportunity, the positive side. So you got to shake people up. And it's not just through brainstorming and sticking stickies on the walls. We have a few very unique and advanced encounters that just shake people's mind and actually don't give them my expertise. It pulls out of their neocortex into their working memory. It pulls out all their expertise and the external world and other people, and it gets them connected because any big success happens with other people, and it's usually new people that get awards won. So it's not hiring new people. It's just a bigger ecosystem, a bigger net of breakthrough ideas. And then there has to be this cadence, this repeating, this discipline in this cooperative pattern that happens for award winners that really gets the execution to happen. And you are a person like I am, and we have all been stuck, whether we were CEO and it was our vision against the boards, or we're at entry level and no one's listening to us. We've all felt in our career that we've been stuck. Have you had a particular time that was particularly acute and painful?
I've had a few.
Tell me one that's most interesting and acute.
Well, you said board and being at odds with the board. I've had an incident, a few incidents like that, and it's where they wanted a certain emphasis put in the business and a certain priority. And so, using your analogy of juggling, I was juggling what I felt was the priority for the business while also trying to address their expectations. And so I was meeting the board's want and trying to help them see that I was at least addressing their needs, while at the same time with my involvement in the business as the president, trying to actually then also take what I felt was the proper initiative and doing the two at the same time. And it was hopefully going to be something that just through the numbers would clearly become evident as to which should become the priority. And so it's respecting people's perspective. It's respecting their experience and insights. It's respecting the fact that they are investors. And so they have skin in the game. So I'm going to listen and I'm going to beseech them as much as I can. But at the same time, because of my interactions with the employees and with the customers and with my day-to-day feet on the ground, I'm going to now also say, okay, but I can't let this go. And it took a lot of long hours, long days, a lot of juggling of different priorities. But at the end of the day, that's what I was paid to do. That's why I was in the role I was in. That's why I was doing what I needed to do. So I felt that it was just par for the course and it was my job description anyways.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. All the smartest people in this world who have studied it rigorously have figured out that life and joy, maybe not happiness and fun all the time, but life and joy is about meaning. And so a board that is 100% focused on financial returns for the stockholders and not how it affects their families and not how customers are affected, but the fiduciary duty is just numbers and just those people, I think are at some point going to have a catch up with them. And it may not be for decades. It may not be till after they retire and reflect. But I think the wise ones really focus on what an experience like that does to you as a person, deeper than the numbers, and to the broader people that you belong to. Was there any challenge or difficulty in that situation that rippled beyond you as an individual?
I don't know if this is what you're asking, but yeah, I ended up letting go and laying off a number of people at the direction, if you will, of where they wanted to take the company as a board. And I don't think it was right or wrong. It was just what needed to happen. So you're the trigger man. So in many ways, as the president of the company, you have to make decisions, the difficult decisions at time, and you're then the one that has to bear those. So yeah, I've experienced that. And I think I'm a better man because of having experienced those things, simply because I have a unique perspective. I wouldn't say unique in the sense of I'm the only one that's gone through it, but a unique perspective in the sense that as a president of a business, like they say about owners, you know, it's lonely at the top. And so there's a lot of times I'm dealing with either cash flow or morale issues, legal issues that no one else in the organization is aware of. And unless I've met with the board recently, they're not going to be aware of it. And hopefully by the time we meet again, it's resolved and I don't have to bring it up. So it's just one of those things.
Well, and it brings you compassion and you're just aware of consequences more. Those are painful moments. And it's funny, once I went independent and started meeting with more companies than just a few of the top in the world, I found how many people have had it happen to them. Not only have they been in a position where they had to do it, but it's happened to them. And it's nearly ubiquitous that someone gets separated from an employer. It's shocking how many people have had that happen. And those that have had it in difficult moments are just more aware and more subtle with their actions during it, I believe. So I think that you are in that way a better person. So let me ask you the other. Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to just be a little bit more direct. There's people, there's faces to this. There's decisions that are made that affect families. And there was a period in our time, just because of the economy and how it was impacting our business model at the time, our business model needed to change. And that change required certain individuals either being let go or at the same time moved into different roles. I could tell you that my experience is one of not just saying I did it, I fired my best friend, I fired my spouse, I fired the brother of the owner. I mean, when you get into a position of you have to make decisions, it's not just individuals, it's individuals that you have relationships with. And so I'm not, it was initially a family business that I'm president of. I'm not part of the family. So when I was put into this role, I later was actually firing one of the business owner's sons. And I was firing some very instrumental people in the organization. I was letting go of my best friend. I ended up firing my spouse. I mean, you're in a situation where decisions have to be made. And these aren't just, you know, people, they're relationships. And I can say that when you go to a family reunion, when you come home to be with your spouse whom you fired, I mean, there's situations here. It has impacts not only just within a household, but in the relationships you have as a person. So the best thing I can definitely say is, and I'm going to be very succinct here, there's a difference between personal and professional, and you have to be able to distinguish between them both and not interweave them as best possible. But the second thing is you have a responsibility, a fiduciary responsibility to the business. It is a self-sustaining, living, breathing entity of which you are a steward or a guardian. And when you're in that capacity, that mindset, you are making decisions that are for the well-being of the business to continue to exist. And if necessary, you have to remove the cancers. You have to actually take care of the dying appendages. You have to deal with things to keep the core alive. And that is your job. And if you can make it healthier and faster and more efficient, better said. But there are times when you have to amputate a toe or a foot, and you hope that it grows back and that there's something that'll come better in its stead. Sometimes it becomes a prosthetic that you put there. But the point is you're the responsible person that's signing and making the decisions in behalf of this entity that can't speak for itself other than from through you. So that's...
Yeah, and it's all the other lives and families that need to be part of that or want to remain part of that.
Oh, so yeah. If you don't get rid of the one problem, you're putting everyone else's livelihood at risk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult duty for sure, especially when you, like you say, you run into one at a family party or you go into a home improvement store and they yell, which is something that happened to me. And I'm not sure I haven't done it to someone else. But it's really important. It's one of the moments where you learn how to be a human being as best you can. And it's a growing experience on both sides of it, for sure. It's painful, but that's when you grow. One other thing about that, I just have to give a shout out to someone because we happen to be talking about this topic. I worked with an HR leader. Her name is Mary Michelle Scott, and she is a delightful and in a positive way, a very unusual person. And I didn't hire her. I arrived on the scene. It was a turnaround, so this sort of activity had to happen. There was a very large spouse that started coming into the building aggressively when I had finished the meeting with his wife. That was unnerving. But like you, an in-law, my brother-in-law, et cetera, in sequential companies. And this woman, the first time, I'd never met her, and she's done something I've never seen since. And it's not a human resource best practice that I've noticed, but she actually invested her own time and some of our time to find as many people, not just low-level, but mid-level people, opportunities and secure them interviews. So she didn't just send us to an outplacement agency. She got personal interviews. And when I witnessed this, when I went to one of the owners, you know, there's several owners, but when I went to one of the owners and said, I'm sorry, we're going to have to let your brother-in-law go. I'm feeling terrible about this. She piped up and said, you know, I have him an opportunity that might even be better for him, and an interview is scheduled if he wants it. I just couldn't believe it. And it happened to dozens and dozens of people that she'd done this for. So when I did a startup, Ray Norda gave us some funding, millions of dollars of funding. We had this startup. We thought we were going to conquer the world, and 9/11 happened, and you know all of our customers were dying, and we were trying to survive. And we had to do it again on our way back up after. And again, she did it for me. She did it for this company. And I think that's what the human in human resources should be. That's heroic in my mind. Anyway, interesting topic. Last, and then I'll let you go. You probably have some opportunity, a singular priority that you really, if I tell you to set aside your modesty, would just celebrate. And I'm asking you to do that. I want you to set aside your modesty, and I want you to pick a singular thing that you just love that you pulled off in your work life, or frankly, even your personal. And then just tell us maybe the top two or three things that you think were the linchpins or the pivot points that allowed you to pull that off. Just a couple of the top ones.
Wow, this is a big answer. I don't know if I can be concise enough. I'm going to try. When I was offered the opportunity to become president of the company, there's a transition that goes on, and I could have been told this, but having experienced it, it's totally different than just cognitively understanding or hearing it. And it's the fact that when you become president, you've got the previous president's legacy, direction, where they're taking the company, and you have to find your own. And it takes time. And it took me a period of time to realize where I felt the company needed to go next, and for me to actually take the helm and be seen by those around me as now the leader. And so I had to step into those shoes. And it took some people, and I was told this would happen, and it did, people trying to test me and see what they could get away with in the, you know, how was I going to be the leader as I took on this responsibility. And so for the first number of months, I would dare say a year, I was getting my feet grounded. How am I handling situations? What's expected of me from different people and so forth? And I learned what my job was going to be. And it was different than what the previous president was doing. I was taking the company in a new direction. I had to take it farther. But there's an epiphany moment. I was at a conference, I was sitting in the audience, and on stage was someone that was basically sharing different insights and perspectives, and it dawned on me, they're younger than me, I'm more experienced than they are, and what they're describing, I could teach it and teach it better. And when I had that epiphany, it was as if I had all of a sudden gotten the permission to now run. I could now run. I had no more excuses. Why was I holding back? Why was I reluctant? And some might refer to it as imposter syndrome. You know, I was the president. I mean, there was no doubt about that, but could I be the leader I needed to be? And so there came that moment when all of a sudden I was able to actually say, you know what, stop with the excuses. You have every right to stand with your head high, start going, act like you know what you're doing, because you do. Not just act like you know what you're doing, because you do. And I was able to take that confidence and run with it. And what I want to share is, prior to this, I was actually involved with receiving awards with the company in other roles, where we were receiving Inc. 500, Inc. 5000s, Utah 100 type awards. And to now have those same accolades under my stewardship, under my leadership, says a lot, because it does speak to the fact that we are under my helm accomplishing a lot of success. And you asked for me to kind of be open.
Yes.
There's a lot to be said when you work as hard as you do, putting in the long hours. There's stresses from legal to taxes to cash flow to payroll. I mean, there's all these things that the buck stops with me. And I've had to deal with that, as many business owners do, as many leaders do. And by darn, I'm doing it, and I'm proud of it. So there you go.
Roger Connect, amazing insights. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to be here. And by the way, accounting success is universal, so keep that in mind.
Thank you for joining us to get leaders unstuck and thriving with their teams. You've heard a little bit about the power of bold encounters and leadership. Watch on. Go to full episodes with the iconic expert interviews at markspencercook.com/podcast.
And please subscribe. My site takes you directly to YouTube video and podcast versions. Please make comments. Share this with your friends. Also, reach out to us to just brainstorm your priorities, challenges, events, or how Bold Encounters might help. Visit windfallpartners.com. Click the Let's Talk button without obligation and reach out. I look forward to speaking. Thank you for joining us. Now, let's lead with Bold Encounters today.